Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Good to see your face on the camera there, my friend. How goes it?
It's all fine and well here in Wonderland.
In Wonderland.
Yeah. As the president's own son-in-law recently paraphrased, when you don't know where you're going, it really doesn't matter which road you take, now does it? Mm.
Profound. Profound.
For the Cheshire Cat.
Well, as always, thank you to our listeners tuning in from far and wide, international and domestic. We appreciate you. And, of course, now, for new viewing pleasure, head over to YouTube and look up the Mod State Podcast or Mod State and find the videos of these podcast episodes with John and I. So head on over, subscribe, and you get to look at us and listen to us as opposed to just listening to us. It's week after week after week. I am so looking forward to November. It's almost like I don't care what the outcome's going to be. I do very much care what the outcome's going to be, but at least maybe just a portion of the madness will just die down. Maybe the forest fires will stop. Maybe, I don't know. But needless to say, the one thing we can be thankful for is the ability for us in this free country to do this week in and week out, and for our listeners. So we certainly appreciate that. Thanks for the comments, by the way, folks, on at least on Podomatic. It's good feedback. So where do we start? Okay, so first off, it is 9/11, and I think it's a moment we need to take the moment. That to just reflect, I think personally, and this one thing I thought about today was just to reflect upon the unity that I most definitely felt. I certainly wasn't that old 19 years ago. However, I did know that I did feel a unity in the United States, and certainly after that, in the several years after 9/11, that the nation certainly had. And I think it was good for me, especially when we do this week in and week out. It's like you're going after what's been happening over the last week, right? This is what we do. And it can be disheartening from time to time. As much as it can be comical, it's also disheartening because of the state of the union. But it was good for me to think back on the unity in the nation after 9/11, and then, of course, also to reflect on, of course, the tragedy that and the heroes all involved in 9/11. And I don't think it'll be anything, you know, that whole event, that day, everything after that, I certainly won't forget. And I think it was good to think of true American, you know, patriotism like that. It's good today to reflect back, to have a good example of patriotism that is so wildly thrown around today. So that's my thoughts, certainly on 9/11. And I'm sure in a way that it, at least for me, it influenced a bit of my service to the country, to this country. Certainly it was several years after 9/11, but we were still very much at war and very much fresh as to the reason why we were at war. So, you know, it's certainly been that event has shaped much of what I'm doing right now with you. So I think it's worthy to reflect upon that. So
I agree. I absolutely agree. We didn't normally we try and outline certain things. We didn't outline this, but then again, it's rather a requisite to requirement.
Indeed.
Of course. And I'm not gonna extrapolate at length. 17 years old, everybody was a certain age when it happened. Doesn't really matter. It happened. And I don't mean the event, doesn't matter. But it's a little interesting. I was texting in a group text with my family, which can be scary in and of itself. But we were talking about this, and there's progressives, and there's anarcho-capitalists amongst my even immediate family. And I reflected and I said, you know, regardless of our respective opinions, that was a time, as horrible as it was, that everybody came together. And in one sense, that's a beautiful thing. B, in the other sense, whether it's the British troops firing squads on colonial separatists to the sinking of American vessels predicating the War of 1812 to the worst war we ever fought, 1861 to 1865, to Pearl Harbor, to the Tonkin Gulf Affair, to 9/11. As much as I hate to actually utter this phrase, it seems that Americans only wake up when there is mass bloodshed. That's honestly what troubles me now. Is that, and I'm not talking about three people. As tragic as all three of those lives were in the past month, the protests. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like we've put paid it all down.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of unfortunate human behavior that tragedy really unifies. And I think that's why families can come together with the death of a loved one.
Don't you think, though? I mean, look, we're both veterans, and regardless of our disparate quote positions on the political spectrum, that granted, I mean, America does it with great aplomb, but it's only when we're down. It's a sense of frustration, I suppose, I have now, that it's like only when we're down and are faced with surmounting impossible odds that finally everybody goes, all right, you know what? Don't care what your sexual indoctrination is. Don't care what your race is. We got to pull together and get this done. Or do I exaggerate?
No, you don't. You absolutely don't. And I think it is a source of frustration. I think even specifically now, looking at the way the country is, I mean, I certainly pine for that sort of national unity. And I certainly don't want that national unity if it means tragedy. So I guess
that's the entire point.
Yeah, exactly. What's it gonna take? I don't know. And I just don't. You know, it would be something like, I just don't know, but
like I don't know a massive infection,
maybe a pandemic could unify. Maybe the death of almost close to 200,000 Americans would be enough to unify the country.
Perfect segue.
Oh,
last
boy,
way, whatever way you would have put it.
Jesus. All right. Well, anyway,
all the president's men.
So what else? What else is going on? So. It is 9/11. Two, the West Coast is on fire. Literally, all over the West Coast is on fire. The president has an unlimited amount of, excuse me, the president has given an unlimited amount of God knows what is going to come down the pike. Interviews.
With regard to,
who knows? There's probably 18 to 36 hours worth of good or bad
resources. I thought you meant unlimited resources.
No.
Airtime? Oh yeah.
Oh no. Not he did that. Certainly not unlimited resources. Resources, John. Let's step back. The federal government will be giving no resources or no direction. At least when it comes to the pandemic.
Airtime.
Yes. What I meant and should have clarified is unlimited amount of, or more than enough airtime to God knows on God knows what topics. I mean,
are you sure?
All right.
I'm sure it wasn't enough.
Maybe. I look.
Don't lie. Don't lie. You enjoyed this shit coming out.
It's not that. Here's the truth.
No, you did.
No. Here's the truth. It doesn't really.
Objective is reality.
No. Here's the thing. It frustrates me because it doesn't. It is as if it doesn't matter, right? Why? So we're at this point where.
What doesn't matter?
Any revelation. So, for example, the president says he downplays the pandemic. Says he doesn't want to cause a panic, but also knows that the severity of the pandemic. So that's one thing, but
it's not exactly.
All right. So
continue.
Okay. So this is also, so it'd be one thing if that was just the case. It would be one. What did he do? He compared himself to Winston Churchill.
Not in the same conversation.
Now hold on. So here's the thing.
No, go ahead.
So the president essentially didn't want to cause a panic and really downplayed the severity, the impending severity of the pandemic. Now, here's the problem. He didn't just downplay it in the sense that, listen, we're not going to cause a panic. Let's figure out how to mount a good federal response to this. Let's come up with a very, dare I say, unified plan. No, his timeline is, it's a hoax. It's not a big deal. I assume no. What was it? I'm getting my timeline wrong here, but it definitely was hoax.
You're definitely getting it wrong.
It's the state's problem. It's China's problem. Or not? I don't know. But it was everyone else's problem except for his problem, and it was a hoax at one point. And now it's just it is what it is. So that's the timeline. So when the president says, "Listen, you've mischaracterized what I meant by it's not. I didn't mean to cause a panic." No. It wasn't about causing a panic. You didn't give a shit about it at all. I mean, and I think you can mince it any way you want, but there was no federal plan to this. There was no unified plan. This was a hoax. You literally watched, and listen, you can say the timeline is what it is. As a healthcare provider, we got wind of it in February.
And we've tracked it chronologically ourselves.
Yes. So as we've been following.
I'm grasping that.
Okay. So anyway, I just don't see. I'd be really curious to hear how it should be spun. How he was mischaracterized.
It's been nothing.
Okay. I would like to know how the president has been mischaracterized by the airing.
That's not what I'm grasping at.
Okay, sounds good.
Come on, man.
Excuse me. Yeah, that sounds good. I
have carried water in a devil's advocate sense where it was fair because, let's get real, if it came down to anybody but Fox News, the president, when he wakes up in the morning, is wrong. Let's get real. You got an R next to your name in the presidency, or when you're running, you're wrong. Otherwise, all these... I don't know, CNN, The Atlantic, The New Yorker, shall I continue? They would have, at least one of them, would have endorsed, I don't know, who was their favorite Republican maverick? John McCain in 08.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of them did. One mainstream leftist outlet. So that's not excusing the president's present conduct or past conduct, but the song remains the same. Let's get real here. It doesn't matter what he does. But what stood out to me is not that, I mean, because even Bill Gates, who everybody suddenly, I'm not going to say everybody, but folks right of center had a problem with because he's making all this money and sticking chips in kids' arms, giving vaccines. I'm going, yeah, the vaccines and free drinking water he's giving away. Yeah, that's really helping Microsoft's business.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is because you've got that one extreme, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the other side. I mean, look, I mean, do we want to...
So here's where I... And I was just scanning through my... I felt like... Anyway, so... And just to step back for everyone hold on.
The reason I brought up Gates is because of the fact it's like, okay, so if the president had just demanded, you know, drive-through testing and testing from day one, the reason I brought up Gates is because even he said, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago? Well, the testing's really useless because... And the contact tracing, because we don't know if somebody's positive for 2 weeks. So what difference does it make? So lying to the media in a press conference is not illegal. Okay, so the president, when he spoke to Woodward, which he should never have, all the president's men's author, why in the expletive deleted would you ever do that? You know what he is.
Yeah, so let's take a step back there, because we just dove right into this. But what we're referring to, of course, is the Woodward. I have no idea how many hours worth of shit he has recorded.
18 conversations. We don't know how long they are.
So that is, and what you're saying is absolutely right. Who in God's name signed off on that? Which it's not like it doesn't matter, because he's going to do what he wants to do.
His own son-in-law said, if you want to understand him, read Alice in Wonderland, amongst three other fairly negative texts.
So anyway, to your point, you are absolutely right. He should have absolutely never spent 1 minute talking to Woodward.
Like, why would you do that?
I don't know.
He thought it would reflect well, actually, come to find out. I'm going...
Well, and that's
in what way?
Yeah, and that's just the thing. I don't know if it's ego or it's absolute disillusionment. I don't know.
It's ego, or he doesn't want to be reelected. Pick one. Well,
which I think at this point, maybe, because I did push that narrative that I thought that, quite frankly, he wasn't too excited to be reelected. But I think there's enough people around him right now that really are pressing for his reelection.
So walk me through how someone who he and his supporters both have had the temerity to compare this situation to Richard Nixon, which is laughable.
Well,
not because of Nixon. How could you ever then give Bob Woodward unsolicited access?
I don't.
He's not fair.
Well, but here's the thing, though. Whether he's fair or not, it's the president just has to talk to it, like in this world.
So you can't talk to your wife.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. Or just go talk to a wall. I don't know. Like or talk
something,
or
man.
Talk into a camera and then delete that shit after you're done. So. I don't know what so let me get back to let me get back to what I originally, how I felt about it, because I think there is, in your case, which I understand, it says you must be gleeful that this stuff is pouring out. And
me?
And no, me. What you said to me.
I don't mean it like that.
I know, but I understand where you're coming from. That I should.
I know you care more about the country.
Yeah, as someone who does not support the current president of the United States, it should be heartwarming to me to see the president dig his own grave, but with 18 conversations with Woodward. Now, I will always do my best to listen to the president as objectively as possible. Quite frankly, and. As though sometimes it may not appear that way. My opinions on how he is in terms of his character and how he acts are one thing, but what he says I will take objectively. Now, what frustrates me, it brings me more frustration than it does happiness that the president is contradicting himself or making himself look like, well, dare I say, the asshole that everyone thinks he is that it doesn't move the needle. That at this point, almost 60 days out to the election, or less than that, it doesn't really move the needle. I don't know that it moves the needle for a lot of people. And it certainly is not moving the needle for his base, because it's easy enough for us to begin to argue about the context of what he said on Woodward's on the tape, where to me it's fairly crystal clear. Like,
I'm not arguing about context.
I think maybe that's like a proverbial argument.
What context is there to debate?
Well, obviously his press secretary came out and essentially denounced the entire thing, or said it's taken out of context. It's not what it meant.
That was the wrong argument. If you're his press secretary, you don't argue that. You don't argue reality. I mean, again, we can go back to the Cheshire Cat of, I'm not insane. My reality is just different than yours. Okay, so we want to be the Cheshire Cat. No, that's very much the wrong argument. To me, it's, look, the president wasn't wrong for saying, I don't want to instill panic. I'm paraphrasing here.
Sure.
But I'm grasping that.
It's pretty close, though.
I'm grasping that point. The point that I'm not grasping is where you completely, and again, it's not illegal to lie at a press conference, but the point where you downplay this to the media, which you know the American people is watching. That's the part where I'm going, how about this? I know this is very tough for you to grasp, but how about you do what you did for months on end and say nothing? Don't engage in a press conference. Don't come out there after you told Bob Woodward. I mean, as much as they refer to Nixon, you know what he is. You know who he is. So you're going to meet with him and say, hey, look, this is airborne, February 7th. And say, this is airborne. We know it's much worse than the flu. It's bad. But then you're going to come out and say to the American people via press conference, again, not illegal. Okay, so anybody thinking of a second impeachment here can keep on smoking the big rocks. But the point is, you're going to say that to him? No one is going to come out.
I guess. And again, so this speaks to, and we'll look at the timeline, man. It literally is, if he had all this information, it's going to be worse, airborne, etc. There are other ways to not cause a panic. Instead of outright lying to the American people, or at least not to the blind American people, who they're the ones that would acquit you if you shot someone on Fifth Ave, that it's a hoax, right? If you want a definition or an example of piss poor leadership, that's it. Unless your entire intent is to sow discourse, right? So that's,
I don't know that I would say his intent in downplaying it was to sow discord. I think, maybe.
I'm not saying it's his full intent. I agree with you there.
No, I'm not talking about now. I'm saying at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't think his intent at that point was to sow discord. It was, maybe this will get herd immunity right away. Maybe it's not that much worse than a flu. Look, I'm not carrying water for the president here, okay? Because that's, again, it's not illegal to not state the full-on truth to the media at a press conference. Sometimes I think that's probably the best strategy. But when you're talking about something that you just told one of all the president's men journalists, who I'm not going to comment on his moral standing or veracity, but you just told him that you know it's airborne, you know it's worse than the flu, so you're going to downplay it to the point you think it's going to go from 15 to zero in the next week? Come on, man.
I don't want this. However, I would just be curious to just be, I can't believe I'm saying this, just in his head for...
No, don't say it.
For even, a half hour just to think about the logic.
Nate, a half hour there.
And I'm...
Don't do it.
Over the cuckoo's nest. I know.
Look. Honestly, it comes down to... I don't think, as I started to say, I don't think that from day one his thought was, I'm going to deceive the people. Okay? I really do think, with how the economy was, that he thought, hey, if I say it, I can manipulate this virus just like I do everything else.
So where is the, how close to the line of boldface lying is he? In your opinion, right?
What's the line there between, I don't want to cause panic, and, come on, it's called what, the Kinsley mistake? Maybe. A politician that tells the truth?
So there's one thing about not causing a panic, right? And you can do that by, coming up with a fairly, at least rational plan that can be told to the American people and say, listen, there's no need to panic. This is coming. Here's our plan. Here's what we'd like to do. We'll adjust as necessary. But this thing is coming, and quite frankly, we've got the best experts here, and we're going to assess. All right. So, but instead, he was like, okay. So I got all this info. It's worse. It's airborne. And then he comes out and he's like, it's a China flu. It's a hoax. Right. So the thing is where is the don't cause panic and. And so his delivery of the entire thing and lying, like how close are those things? I mean, it seems pretty damn close to me.
All right. If I was the 10th man in the Hebrew world, or if I was forced to be devil's advocate now,
mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is it ain't like he's the first one to change his stance. You've also got Dr. Fauci back in February. You've also got Speaker Pelosi. Back in February, both saying this was not going to change the norm. Now, I get it. Neither one of them is president of the United States. But my point is, it's pretty nervy then somebody with half the, or I don't know, two-third of the approval rating of the president, Speaker Pelosi, it'll tell you that. But it's pretty nervy then to turn around and say, I knew it all along. The hell you didn't.
Yeah, so there's, I would say, at least with at least the experts, I'm not saying Pelosi is a coronavirus expert. What I will say is, there's
the booze expert.
maybe. There's making predictions to say that I don't think it's going to disrupt life in this way. Or
so Dr. Fauci doesn't count.
No, he does count. What I'm saying is the delivery. What I didn't hear Dr. Fauci, who is not the president of the United States, what I did never heard Dr. Fauci say is it's a hoax, and actively create division in terms of mask use, which is key to transmission prevention, and then also instill just a little bit of racism in there with the China virus, like purposely kind of digging it. I'll be honest with you. I didn't hear Pelosi do that. Fauci do that.
Fauci didn't do it doesn't make it racist. No, Nate.
What do you mean?
Because Fauci didn't say the China virus does not mean that Trump was being racist. I'm sorry. Not everything is race issue.
Listen, it isn't. I'm not saying it's racist on the equal footing of some other horrific racist shit that's happened in this country. However, that phrase itself, instead of...
Okay, so Spanish influenza, that's racist?
So, we can play this game.
I'm not playing it.
No. We can play this game.
Oh my God.
We can play this game. You cannot... you can't sit there with a straight face and tell me...
I probably won't.
Or maybe you can. That the president's use of the China virus was just absolutely naive. I mean, it came from China, so it's just the China virus.
Actually,
or was it meant to be derogatory?
Actually, you know what I can? I'm not going to do this with a straight face.
All right,
okay?
Because you're caught. Listening, you are on camera.
The people listening on Podomatic or iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever, Y'all can't see this, but I hope you hear me smiling. I actually can say that because I honestly don't think that Donald John Trump is a racist. You know what I think he is? I'm not going to say the word because I'm really trying to tamp down on my profanity.
What do you mean?
I don't think he cares.
Okay. So what you mean is he's kind of an asshole.
Exactly.
Cool.
I look back on his associations, white, black, Hispanic. They're all in there. Okay. Otherwise, Herschel Walker wouldn't have been. I know that name means nothing to you, but he would have been at the GOP convention. I don't think the man cares. He was raised never hearing no. Except where, no, you're not going to go to a prep school and raise hell. You're going to go to a military high school, a military academy. He's never been told no his entire life, okay? And his small $1 million loan that got turned into over $300 million in loans from his father saved his ass. And, you know, he survived 4 corporate bankruptcies, no personal ones, you know, so I guess that doesn't really count. But I don't think the man cares on that level. I don't think he's wired that way. And that's not a defense as far as, no. But look, I don't think him saying the China, well, where did it originate from, Nate?
Listen,
Wuhan, China.
So what I will tell you is I will agree with you that I don't
where
think,
did
hold
it originate
on.
From?
It originated from China.
So what's wrong with calling it the China virus?
Because what it does. Hold on.
You're
bear with me
about
here.
Context?
Yep. Bear with me here.
There you go.
So,
there's your outline.
All right. So you're right. It did originate from China. Absolutely. So the intent of using the term China virus was to make it as if it was a bad thing. So it was China. It's China's fault.
Well, it was. It was a bad thing.
It is a bad thing. But what he was able to do with that phrase is to, or what he did do, whether it was inadvertently or not, was alienate Chinese Americans. And you can shake your head.
No, you can shake your head. I'm not saying he didn't alienate them, Nate, but look, the fact of the matter is, don't try and cloud the fact that that is not, forget Russia, that is not our biggest geopolitical adversary. All right? There's nothing wrong with pointing out the fact that they hid, speaking of clouding facts, they deceived the WHO, who everybody on the left wanted their facts taken over the president's and Fauci's. Okay, so let's not discount the WHO because it's convenient now. They clouded the fact that this thing was bad as far back as July of last year. Okay, so for him to say it's the China virus, I honestly, look, come on now.
Here's the measure of a good leader. Here's the measure of a good leader. A good leader stops and thinks about the words that he or she will use and the impact that those words will have. So the president of the United States has a choice. He could call it coronavirus, he could call it COVID-19, but he chose to use China virus for a reason. Not because he's like, well, it's from China, so we'll just call it the China virus. No, it was tactical.
You think he was trying to insult Chinese Americans?
It isn't that he was purpose.
He
hold on. It
out.
Wasn't. It wasn't that he was trying to insult Chinese Americans. But what happened was there was an exponential increase in hate and violent crimes against Asian Americans. So the president, as the leader, had a choice to think about the words he was going to use to describe the coronavirus and figure out, maybe assess what impact that could have on his citizens in the United States, and also played a role in division. The division that we see in the United States today. That's my point. I agree with you 100%. China, it came from China. It's a virus from China. You could call it the China virus. But what the president, because the president's an asshole and because he emboldens assholes, it puts Chinese and Asian, well, just broadly Asian Americans on the chopping block for assholes. And that's the problem. And this is what the president does over and over and over again. And so people come to his defense like, well, he's not wrong. Well, you're right. He's not wrong. What he's not doing is thinking about what impact he is having by the words that's what a good leader does. And quite frankly, he's not a good one because he doesn't think about often. He doesn't even think about who he's giving an interview to. 18 different conversations. So that's my point.
I'm not going to dispute the fact that the president needs to parse his words better. I think that's probably the clubhouse leader for understatement of the year. I'm not going to say that he shouldn't have given the interview to Bob Woodward, because I think I've already said that on multiple occasions in just this podcast and text for the podcast. But I'm going to diverge with you when I don't think his intent in saying that was to foment some sort of rage stateside. Or I'm not buying that.
Okay.
What?
Well, go ahead.
Well, what I'm getting at is he recognizes, and the reason you can back this up, it does not matter what side of the political spectrum you're on here. This is the first president since the China Accords were signed, Nixon Ford. The opening of the trade with China. This is the first president we've had that has been actually willing to say, not only do we have a problem here, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama. First one to actually say, no, we're going to do something about this. The illegal currency manipulation fact, okay, the seizure of the intellectual property of American and European firms fact. Okay, and the South China Seas, we're going to defend Taiwan. Fact. Okay, this is the first president we've had willing to do that. I don't hear anything in his rhetoric that says, hey, Chinese Americans, look out. Because dictators, I'll address this authoritarian point, which you didn't bring up, but put it in the laptop. Authoritarians, they don't ask. They don't meander. They round you up, and you go to gulags. And or you get shot. Okay. So I'm not buying the whole he was being racist. I think this was a simplistic way to say, no, this is our greatest geopolitical threat. Xi Jinping. Okay, right here. And they withheld the truth from the WHO. We know this. This is not a conversation. The New York Times reported it. So it must be true. Mm-hmm. So we know for a fact that they misled the entire globe on this. So the president rightly, in my opinion, put paid to any doubt that this is their fault. Mm-hmm. That this, they knew in July this was an issue. It doesn't excuse him subverting the truth in the American people by any means. I'm not making that case. But let's not try and cloud the fact that China could have spared the world a lot of misery.
Mm. Look, here's the thing. I agree with you. I agree with the president putting the pressure on the Chinese government like he has. Here's the thing, though. We can get enough done geopolitically, right? That it doesn't... Let me take this back. Collect my thoughts on this. I agree with you, and I do agree with you on the subversion of the American people. What I will say is the... use of, so when, let's, for example, he uses the term the China virus. Okay, so instead of, you know, like, listen, we're going to really stick it to China, we're really going to let them know and let the world know that this is China's problem, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this term China, the China virus. So without further assessing the damage that it was doing against American citizens, he doubled down when he found out the sort of glee that his supporters got from the China virus. Because it was, in no context, China virus is no different from the Spanish flu. However, in the context of 2020, China virus, it just means something a little different. It's a little whiff of of racist in there. And I'm sorry, you can, on it, with no context, it absolutely is a virus from China, and it's a China virus. But it managed to do damage to American citizens, that statement, and the president kept using it because he knew it caused an uproar. That's my point. And I know we've spent it, and I guess the importance of that is it once again just validates over and over the type of leader he is. And like you said before, is he a traditional racist, a KKK wearing, robe wearing Klansman? No. Does he not give a shit? You're absolutely right. Is he an asshole? Yes, but he emboldens the same type of people.
That's two different conversations. Who his rhetoric emboldens? I mean, we're not talking about Adolf Hitler here, okay, who set out to inflame and embolden people to kill those weaker than them. We're not talking about that person here, okay? Just simply because he likes causing an uproar, because he thinks that will save his flagging approval ratings and or turn out people at the polls, that's not the same thing as somebody that goes, you know what, maybe if I use this phraseology, some people will get killed and it'll help the cause. I mean, come on, be real now. That's not the same thing.
I'm not saying that it's the same thing, but, well, it's a whole nother conversation. I'm not going to assume that the current state of, or the rhetoric of the president could be a slippery slope to something, because I think...
Well, this podcast could be a slippery slope.
Sure, it could be. Either way, I don't even know how the hell we got here. Oh, it's because of the Woodward tapes and the panic and all this stuff. It's, again, at the end of the day, the only thing that's really frustrating is it doesn't really move the needle. When for
frustrating?
What's that? This conversation? No, I'm just kidding.
No, you said the only thing that's frustrating at the end of the day. I'm going to one?
Well, I try to just keep it to one because it's exhausting.
Oh my God. But
look, we got a couple minutes left. Let's, because I'm sure everyone's so bored of me thinking that China virus is so racist, and they're like, look, you lefty, soft, progressive, get out of here. But
okay, our 64% leftist audience is probably not booing you right now.
Maybe not. I would like to go to polling. So I was reading somewhere today that the electoral map is, the gap is closing a bit. And I also was listening to some reporting that had to do with the campaigning of both the Biden campaign and the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign is doing the knock on doors approaches, and the Biden campaign is very much doing the opposite, and they're engaging online and they're engaging via text and telephone. Now, polls will always tell us, you know, you absolutely have to take everything with a grain of salt, sample size, etc. However, I feel like I wasn't incredibly surprised when I saw that the electoral map just seems to be, the gap seems to be narrowing a bit. And right. The real question to me is it individuals willing to be more honest about who they're voting for? Or is there something that Biden's not doing or something that the president is doing that seems to be narrowing the gap? And I don't know if that means campaigning heavily in places like Michigan. Obviously, you know, the map is the entire United States, but
right.
That's just where I'm at right now. I think we all agree that this presidential race is not going to be, I don't think it's going to be a landslide.
And unfortunately, for the good of the country, it should be a landslide one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree.
One way or the other. That would be for the best of the country.
It should just be unequivocal. This is the winner by a
Nixon McGovern. Landslide.
Yep.
Nixon McGovern. God. Yeah. It's just.
So, but yeah, that's just kind of where my head's been in terms of the different campaign styles. And I think depending on the outcome of this election, certainly I think at least strategists will be looking back on this election to sort of at this. Maybe another, like a bit of a watershed moment. We've had another presidential election with social media, online presence, and more engagement via potential engagement via telephone and text. Does it make a difference? Will we be able to glean anything about the strategy from these campaigns because of COVID? Is it just a wash? So I was curious your thoughts as I was pondering all this.
I'm not going to say it's a wash. I do not think that pollsters learned anything profound from 2016 or 2018 based on the metrics they're using, as in who they're polling, because they can't wrap their minds around how in Florida the race is even within the margin of error. It's a dead heat. Depending on what poll you look at, and that's not me splicing hairs in favor of Trump. I mean, 0.5 for Trump or 0.5 for Biden. Well, one thing they forget when they look at Hispanics as a monolith, Cuban Americans, at best for the Democrats, 7 out of 10 of them are voting Republican, at best. Well, there's quite a few of those in Miami. Then you look at the fact that Hispanics, by and large, are not only Catholic, but as Catholics, at most center-left. The other side could be quite far right. And you've got the panhandle of Florida, you know, the military vote. It's called the Redneck Riviera, to where Carl Rose from, and he calls it that himself. So Florida, it's a confusing state on a number of levels, but that it shouldn't even be categorized as leaning Democrat. That's not going to happen. Hmm. Not this race.
It'd be Texas as well would be lumped in there.
Exactly. But here's the thing that I look at. And this is what I looked at in 2016 that made me call those states so successfully. You know, I had 49 out of 50 right. I'll take that. But what I looked at was things like what's going on in Michigan with Senator Peters versus John James. Yes, John James is a very charismatic black Republican, a potential rock star. But you look at those races in an area that normally you would think, okay, this is going to be 7%+. Well, it's gone from 5.2 3 weeks ago to now 2.93%, well within the margin of error. And don't discount the fact that I think Biden waited way too late to make a distinction. This is not me saying that Biden is in favor of defunding the police. He has repudiated that on a number of occasions. This is not me saying that Biden is in favor of riots and burning down businesses, okay? Because that's a lot more complex than just, oh, burn Whitey down. Well, there's a lot of minority businesses that have been affected by this. But Biden waited way too long to make that distinction. He relegated the field to Trump. You know, and I'm not saying that's the final, I'm not saying that's the final verdict, but like I texted you a few days ago, we always say this is the most consequential election of our lifetimes, and you know, it's just inherit the win. But in reality, the debate on September 29th, because of early voting, mail-in voting, since 1960, and I say that not because Richard Nixon was in it, but it was such a distinct debate with Nixon and Kennedy because the people that listened to it on the radio felt that Nixon had won. People that watched it on television thought that Kennedy had won. So it was a very influential debate. But since that time, I think it stands to reason this is going to be the most influential debate we've had in modern history because of the mail-in, the early voting. And I mean, look, this isn't me picking on Joe Biden, but again, let's not try and cloud another fact, and that's that he got reporters complaining that they can't ask a question not on the cue card. Biden's using a teleprompter at press conferences. Okay, I'm not saying he can't hold up for a 2+ hour debate. But one thing's for sure, his opponents could be all over the map.
His opponent will have crushed up that Adderall pill and just right. Mini strokes and everything. Just
Look, that wasn't intended as a criticism of Biden, but I know you think he's gonna hold up for a 2+ hour debate, man, but he ain't going to have a teleprompter helping him there, even though Chris Wallace is the perfect person to host that first debate.
We will see. So actually, I'm going to throw that out to listeners real quick. Because we've been batting this around.
Wait, sport natural?
Yeah, hold on. We got another 2 hours. No, we talked about this conversation of actually live streaming. So obviously the debate would be done, and given school and other constraints, we might not actually be able to meet and listen to the debate in real time. But if we were to go back and watch it and give our commentary, would that be something that it's obviously a bit different from our normal our normal type podcast episode, but if that would be interesting to listeners, I certainly would like, you can just leave a comment in this, on this podcast episode in Podomatic, or just email to modstate@modstate.com. Just a yes, I'd like to hear. Cause I think it could either be a massive waste, colossal waste of time, or it could be really interesting. It probably wouldn't be that, informational. It would probably be a whole lot of like, oh shit.
I mean, we could do a live text stream.
Maybe.
Yeah. You know, we get on Messenger and just, I mean, that might be the most effective, because, you know, otherwise it's like pause, record. I don't know.
We could just play it. We could figure it out. We'll figure it out. But if that's something that the listeners would think would be interesting and good historical episode to have, please let us know.
Oh, it will be.
We'll see.
I mean, think about it. Look, man, it's like when they ask me if I smoked after sex, and I'm like, I don't know, I've never looked.
God. Anyway, well, hey, look, we're at 50 minutes. As always, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you week in and week out. And again, a big shout out to our listeners, back up to number one in politics on Podomatic, at least today, at least a couple days.
Damn right.
And just about breaking the top 50 on that hosting site. So your support means a lot, and, you know, continue to hit us up with those comments. They're good. It's good feedback, but it's also kind of drives us on and gives us a lot of motivation. So,
I mean, think about how far we've come. I mean, to call it a shoestring is almost an insult to shoestrings, but I don't know. It's really special, and we thank you all here and abroad, especially Vive la France. Definitely. Appreciate your exponential patronage.
Indeed. Well, as always, honor and privilege, my friend. So until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.